Hey, what's up? My name's Ray Stein, and I'm just thinking out loud. Hello, guys, and welcome back to another episode of my podcast. Sorry, I just ran up the stairs, so I'm kind of out of breath. Whew. But anyways, today we are going to be talking about a little bit about the Salem witch trials, like just the very beginning of it, because, you know, yeah. But we're more going to be going into the history of how it got to Salem. And the reason that I kind of wanted to talk about witch trials in general, especially a little bit about the Salem witch trials, is because I actually have I am actually related to one of the convicted witches, and this particular person actually escaped the Boston jail because of supposedly a corrupt Boston jailer, or I don't want to say he was corrupt, but he took bribes and that's how some families were able to get their relatives out of jail and escape to freedom. Now, this woman's name is Mary Perkins Bradbury. I believe she is my 10th great-grandmother. And yeah, so she was in Salem when all this happened and was convicted of being a witch. And she was 77 at the time and had 11 children. That's a lot. So yeah, let's get into it. Okay, so we all know about the story of the witches in Salem. But exactly how far in the past do witch trials actually go? And, well, it may just be rooted deeper in history than we actually think. It all started in Ireland in 1324. At least, that is the first documented witch trial, where Richard Ledred, the Bishop of Ossory, he condemned his diocese to be a group of devil worshippers, otherwise known as witches. It was Dame Alice Keteller, who was at the center of this scandal, and she was accused of being a witch by her own stepchildren. That is quite interesting, actually. Alice and her followers had a number of charges against them, like malicious murder of Alice's fourth husband via poison and witchcraft, holding secret meetings in churches at night, practicing dark magic. This included brewing love potions, which doesn't sound entirely bad, but it was 1324, so like, any type of potion was like, it's a witch. Yeah. But this also included the practice of dark magic, included making love potions, mutilating animals at crossroads as an offer to demons, and having sexual relations with their demon familiar. Yeah. It was then that Alice was tried and found guilty, but before she could meet her demise, she actually was able to flee Ireland. But she left the rest of her servants or followers to suffer the burning stake. And that took place in November of 1324. And with time, the fear of witches would only grow, spreading across Western Europe rapidly. It was a very broad belief by the Christian community that witches were devil worshippers and that they did his bidding. Which now, hearing about that today is like, y'all are idiots. Have some common sense or, like, logic. I'm speechless. Over a century later, on December 5th, 1484, Pope Innocent VIII denounced the actions of people who had given themselves to the devil, whether the person was male or female, if they had done incantations, charms, or conjurings, they are a witch and would likely spread their evil magic to other innocent people, like luring them in to become a witch like them. This meant that anyone was able to persecute anyone they suspected of witchcraft. This type of publication is called a papal bull. Papal bull. Yeah. Just 3 years after this publication, Heinrich Kramer, a clergyman, published Malleus Maleficarum, or The Hammer of Witches. This piece of literature suggested that the uses of torture should be used as means to get a confession out of a witch, a suspected witch, that is. And according to the Occult Museum, they also used deception to attempt to get a confession out of these supposed witches. And in the case of torture, there would be a judge present who would try to get a confession from these people freely, like, hey, you don't have to be tortured if you just say that you're a witch. And if you say that you're a witch, you most likely will not die. But who knows? But in some cases, the person would be like, no, I'm not a witch. You crazy? And the judge would be like, okay then, I guess I have to torture you to get the confession out of you. And one form of torture they used is called a strappado. This is where a person is like tied to a rope and then they are supposed to, they fall from like a really high place, but just before they hit the ground, the rope catches them. That is scary. Cause like, if you think about it, this method of torture may have failed a few times, maybe. Like say someone then didn't tie the knot tight enough. Curse, splat, they go. And after this, of course, if they did confess, they were promised that they would not die. Like, they wouldn't, if they're tried, the consequence may not be death. Malleus Maleficarum was published in Germany and became popular instantly. And there was about a dozen versions of it across Europe. And for 200 years, it was the second most popular piece of literature next to the Bible. Think of that comparison. One piece of literature is totally, like, holy and good and good. And then the second one is, like, torture people if they don't say they're witches. 'Cause witches are bad. And they will hurt you. If they don't. And they must die if they don't say that they're a witch. In 1597, King James VI of Scotland, aka James I of England, published a dissertation on necromancy, which is the practice of communicating with the dead, and black magic. It was intended to educate misinformed people of the origins of black magic and necromancy, its practices and implications. This is called the Daemonology. And it outlined how practicing witch hunting was necessary in a Christian society. He claimed that his conscience had swayed him to warn his people of how dangerous the devil's power is, and the powers of those who are in cahoots with the devil, aka the witches. Now, King James's subjects acted upon the recommendations that were stated in the Daemonology, as well as the literature written by Heinrich Kramer. They were like, hey, these two dudes know what they're talking about. Maybe we should do what they say. And of course, this led to many deaths. This is why between 1580 and 1662 is not, and that's why it, that period of time is known as the Burning Times, because people were being burned at the stake. And that was seen in Europe and Scotland. And these people were supposedly witches. In England and in North America, it was more common. The most common methods of execution were hanging and being throwing women into a river. But hanging was more used. Ow. Hit my elbow. Since the fear of witchcraft had been spreading so rapidly, a man named Matthew Hopkins took it upon himself to make witch finding a career. He was noted as the self-styled witch finder general. But he was only active between 1644 and 1647. So, like, he wasn't a witch finder general for that long. And some suspect that Hopkins and his associates are the reasons that more people were convicted of being witches than in England than in the past 100 years. And the death toll was around the death toll because of this was around 300. Hopkins had also written a handbook called The Discovery of Witches, which had taken plenty of inspiration from the demonology written by King James I. But one difference is that at this time, torture was illegal in England, so England was like... Sorry, I thought I heard something. So England was just basically like, torture? No. No. But, like, unfortunately, like Heinrich Kramer had suggested, Hopkins had also suggested in his handbook that violent methods of interrogation should be used. One of these methods that Hopkins used was using a blunt knife to cut into the skin of the person to see if they would bleed. Or tying a woman to a chair and tossing her into a body of water. If the person, per se, floated, then they were a witch. If they sunk, they were innocent, but they were dead anyways, because they drowned. Those two methods were ones that Hopkins used the most in the decades after. So yeah. Though most of the witches were convicted were women, there were some men as well. Most of the people that were found guilty were poor and elderly, and 75% of those people were unfortunately women. Now, on July 11th, 1629, a woman on the Franco-German border in Strasbourg was suspected of child murder and witchcraft. The old woman had been accused of killing her grandson by poisoning his soup. Though she was severely tortured, she never confessed to the crimes she had been accused of. The official record of this woman has been unfortunately lost in history, but we can only assume that, like many other women and some of the men in this case that were convicted, she possibly was killed. Even though men had been convicted, women were said to be more likely to face death for their convictions, whether it be burning at the stake, or the hangman's noose, or, you know, being tossed into a flippin' river or lake or something. Like, why? Why any of those methods? Why torture? Many pieces of literature about the dangers of sorcery were published at this time, but also there was an increasing concern about the depraved state of women during this time that had been circulating. Like, depraved meaning, like, kind of, like, people were like, hey, why is it mainly women that are being accused of this? Like, they were concerned, they were questioning it a little bit. And this man, theologian at the University of Cambridge, William Perkins, wrote the Discourse on the Damned Art of Witchcraft. And this is where it may anger some people. This piece of literature stated that since women were apparently the weaker gender, they were more likely to find themselves becoming a witch, entangled in the devil's illusion, as this literature states. And it's more likely for women than it is for men. A different theory brought about by a different author suggested that women might be spawns of the devil, because everything about them was apparently evil. Let that sink in for a second. Okay, now that we've let it sink in, let's move on. It is not possible to verify that the convicted women and the convicted men had actually done these horrible deeds, whether they sacrificed live animals, intentionally killed or hurt people or not. And it is very unfortunate that many believed it to be true, with just someone's account of what these people had apparently done. And many witches were not even killed by law enforcement at the time. Many faced deaths at the hands of angry villagers, angry crowds, angry mobs, whatever you want to call it. These were lynchings that were not for personal reasons. Many unfortunately believed that these certain people were witches, so they must be killed in order to protect the public from their powers. This was a form of mob justice because people were, and they killed these other people because they were afraid. If you think about it, how many times has fear alone actually killed people? Like, I know it's not, like, something that could, like, literally kill, like, a knife or a person or a gun. But, like, how many times has fear been the cause of deaths? And not just in these witch trials. But it was apparently these women and men were dangerous, but it was, in my perspective, it was highly likely that these convicted witches were just innocent people who maybe looked a bit different, talked a bit different, had some different ideals, or were just women who were outspoken at the time and stood up for themselves. Yeah. Around 1800 in Denmark, an 82-year-old beggar woman named Anna Clemens was caught by angry villagers who believed that poor Anna Clemens was indeed a witch. It is said that a wise woman, putting that in air quotes, had told the crowd of villagers to beat the woman to death, because her blood being spilt would be the only way to break her powers. They followed these commands, and poor Anna was beaten to death by this mob of villagers. Increasing religious hysteria and paranoia had been the most convincing explanation of this witch hunt mania. Yeah. After the logic and rational thinking of the Enlightenment period, the witch mania had begun to die down. This is when people started thinking, like, hey, maybe witchcraft is not really a thing? Or, like, maybe witches are not the spawn of the devil? Like, finally, it only took you to kill, like, 300 people to realize that. Are you kidding me? I am baffled. I know this was a different time, and that education wasn't really, like, a prevalent thing amongst a lot of people then, probably. But, like, it took you that long. It took these people centuries to figure out that maybe just witches were not real. I'm not saying that they maybe aren't real at all, but, like, maybe they're not bad. But unfortunately, before this period of time had begun, the hysteria would spread from Western Europe to the colonies in what is now known as the United States of America. And the most notable of these cases is better known as the Salem Witch Trials. In 1688, the Goodwin family, John, a mason and father to six children, was at its head, had been what started it all, really. The oldest daughter, Martha, noticed their washerwoman had been stealing some linen from the household. Martha accused the woman of theft, but this washerwoman wasn't just a simple washerwoman. She was the daughter of a certain scandalous woman by the name of Goody Glover, who was said to be a witch. Now, that is all I'm going to cover for today's episode. The whole witch trial thing, I'm interested to know that it went as far back as possibly 1324. I know that there could have been witch trials that went undocumented beforehand. That's a possibility. But, like, I'm surprised that it went... I guess I knew that it went... That it happened before the Salem witch trials, but that's really the only big witch trial history that you hear about. At least in America. So yeah. But if you want to find out more about what happened during the Salem witch trials, I highly suggest you listen to the first season of the podcast Unobscured with Aaron Mankey. And his last name is spelled M-A-H-N-K-E. That is Unobscured with Aaron Mankey. You can find it on Stitcher, I know for certain. And possibly many, many more streaming platforms for podcasts. But anyways, that is all for today. Have a great day, a great life, a great whatever. stay safe out there, and I'll see you next time. Bye! Thank you.